the window even exists, or if there is such a thing as a living room. As body moves, I hear each step on the hardwood floor as if it were mine. This step, then the next, then the next. I experience everything in slow motion. More accurately, I experience everything frame by frame by frame. Each moment is a frame for me, not necessarily connected with any other. It's like the rock with lichen on it that you look at through a magnifying glass, a universe in itself, completely undivided. When I'm walking, each movement within one step is complete in itself. It's one step at a time, but actually it's everything in between that too. Now, now, now. There is literally no time and space, no past or future, not even a present. No one coming, no one going, no meaning to it, no motive, no goal. And finally, you get to a place where nothing moves. That is home. The place we all long for, the still point, the center of the universe. Absolute zero. Miraculously, the living room appears. A window appears. And I experience a little girl's excitement spilling over like a bubbly artesian wonderment. Will it go to the window? That's what seems to be happening, and I can never know, as I feel its next step, body moving forward, the click of a shoe. Will it open the window? Is that the way of it? I notice a hand reaching out, and as the phone rings, I experience a burst of internal laughter as the body turns to walk in the other direction. This is the only way the window could stay closed. And a window that is closed now is the way of it. I see a hand pick up the phone just because it does, and again I delight in the way of it. Lips move, voice speaks into the phone. Hello? And I'm thrilled at the familiar sound out of nowhere, its very own voice, this endless, mindless, ecstatic dream of what isn't, with no meaning, no sorrow, no life, no death. There is nothing about it that is not the is, and therefore nothing that is not beautiful. I watch as my body moves to the kitchen, to the stove. I watch as my hand picks up the steamer and takes the journey to the sink. You never know what it will do until it does it. Will it eat the squash from the steamer? It takes a plate from the cupboard and puts a piece of squash onto it. And it is the squash. It is the steam rising from it. It is the body, the plate, the sink, the counter. And what am I? I must be a what? I can't find an identity, as everything else is busy being what it is. Is it really necessary to be something? No, and also that's not possible. Can I pretend to be something? No, too late. My time for that is past. I'm awake, as nothing but laughter, inner lightning, aware, alive in myself, and not this, not this, not this. The squash gets to be a something. The sink gets to be a something. And yet I can never be anything, no matter how much I might attempt to create myself a substance. I can imagine colors, sounds, as I create squash, counter, plate, and notice again that this dream too, which is constantly disappearing, gone even as I notice it, is as vibrant as the dream of window or phone. It lives only for its own delight. Is only a flash in apparent time. Will it use a fork? Its hands? I watch the dream. I love it. Even as I notice it eating the squash cannot exist. Taste? I don't bother projecting it, since it projects without me. It is delicious, and the taste is dreamed. The squash is dreamed. The counter, plate, and fork are dreamed, and the dreamer, too, is dreamed. and I notice that this is all I can be, and that everything is born out of me, and there is nothing that is or isn't. It's all one huge, amazing joke. If I could smile, I would.
When they lose their sense of awe, people turn to religion.
When you revere a spiritual teacher, it's yourself that you're revering, because you can't project anything but yourself. And as long as there is something unhealed in you, you have to attach that to the teacher when you don't get your way or when your belief system is threatened. He says something, you put meaning onto it, you think that he's wrong or lacking, and you move out of reverence. What you're reacting to is not what he said, but what you heard. It's a fine thing to love Jesus, but until you can love the monster, the terrorist, the child molester, until you can meet your worst enemy without defense or justification, your reverence for Jesus isn't real, because each of these is just another of his forms. That's how you know when you are truly revering your spiritual teacher, when your reverence goes across the board. If you think you're devoted to a spiritual teacher, that's a wonderful beginning. You get to see how your devotion could look when it's directed to all of us. Whatever disrespect, invalidation, or fear you project onto an enemy, sooner or later, you'll project it onto your spiritual teacher. Everyone is your teacher, and the most powerful spiritual practice is to hang out with the people who criticize you. You don't even have to do that physically, since they live right here in your head. And when you think that you've grown beyond all defensiveness and justifications, then hang out with your enemies physically and see how lighthearted you are when they trash you. That's the real